Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, I've apparently. Now, this is a short bit because A, James has got to go, and B, we just spent an hour talking, well, over an hour, talking about things which you'll see later, but we need to talk about everything else which has gone on. So welcome to this disjointed extravaganza. What has happened? Oh, Casper, the world champions. Congratulations, Casper.
Can I just say the best picture of the weekend was from the Greek Grand Finals? I don't know if anybody's seen it, but AEK Athens won the West Division of the Greek Domestic League. And AEK's fans are all ultras. And it's the first time I've seen pictures from a rugby league game with flares and fireworks going off.
That's because they're banned here. Don't encourage it.
No, at the end of the game, not during the game. Not throughout the pitch, still during. But what a great picture to see the AEK players going over to their fans and being absolutely fated. In the traditional way. It was a great image anyway. If you haven't seen it, look it out on social media.
I know, rugby league's rubbish anyway because everyone hated Castleford and Leeds. It was a boring game and stuff, so don't need to talk about it, do we?
There wasn't a lot to talk about. I thought Castleford were particularly dogged in their defence and got exactly what they deserved.
That Ralph coming up the stairs?
Well, he's got to be employed somewhere.
I mean, Carson says, good evening, gentlemen and Richard. From Wakefield, it's not my fault. Hooray, says Andy. I mean, apologies, we are only here for a short time, but you will enjoy what's to come later. What was your highlight of the weekend, James?
If anything. Oh, my highlight of the weekend. I only watched the two TV games, and I'm trying to remember which they were. Castleford Leeds.
Saints Hull.
Yeah, I thought the Saints Hull game wasn't a bad game, actually. And, you know, I don't think people would have expected the performance that Hull put in. But I thought the overriding sentiment from the Castleford-Leeds game was that ultimately the team that won it wanted it more. I thought that, not suggesting that Leeds didn't want it, but I definitely thought Castleford were playing for Andy Last. And they're putting a performance that obviously the fans were wanting to see for a few weeks now. So, you know, and I think it shows with Hull what you can do. As Hull FC fans know, they can be inconsistent. So the challenge is for them now, as Tony Smith said after the game, is maintaining that standard of performance into next week and the week after and the week after that. And that's the challenge, isn't it? Whilst they didn't get the result that they perhaps would have liked, the performance was there.
It was a massive turnaround, wasn't it? From losing by 60 to virtually being a knock-on over the line away from beating the champions.
Yeah, and how does that change in 1 week? You haven't coached the players in a week. And by and large, that for me is about attitude. And so I think they would have had a bit of a soul-searching discussion after that resounding loss against Salford. And the players demonstrated within a week how they can turn it round. So I think, you know, if you're a Hull FC fan, I think you've got to stick patient. You know, they've got a new coach in there. He's not going to change things overnight. as Warrington saw last year with Darryl Powell, it can take a while. I think the understanding is, again, at Hull, I think similar to Warrington, they've got a significant number of that squad off contract. So, to some extent, players may be playing for a contract, but that can become unsettling, can't it? But who do they play this week?
Hull are at home to the Lee Leopards.
So, you know, I don't, that's not going to be easy, is it? You know, Lee with their impressive win against St Helens a couple of weeks ago. I obviously didn't see any of their game against Warrington this week, but that won't be easy. But back at home, hopefully with the crowd behind them,
well,
I think
that's the one
important
thing. They've got to get the crowd behind them, but I think they'll come sceptical.
I think they will, but I think the performance they put in at the weekend would have helped it, you know. You know, so hopefully the crowd can get behind their own players, and they put in a similarly good performance.
Big blow for Leeds, Phil, because not only has Cruz Leeming decided he doesn't want to be a Leeds Rhino anymore, which is fair enough, but now James Bentley, his understudy, has been suspended for this week, so he can't play against the Catalan Dragons on the telly.
No, I think we need to pay credit to Castellan and Warrington, because I think, as we were talking about earlier, that you do have dips in the season, and I think we've got one of them at the moment. The first two rounds, maybe three, there's the excitement of the new season, there's new players turning out in the colours, crowds are turning up, bands beforehand, you know, you've got all that feeling of everyone's got the same opportunity off the starting line. So you get a boost at the start of the season. The weather's still not conducive to the best rugby. The clocks don't go forward again till this weekend, which makes everybody feel a little bit better that spring is in the air. So rounds maybe 3, 4, 5. The standard does tend to drop a little bit. It is a little bit more 5 drives and a kick. I think we saw with the Salford-Wakefield game yesterday that, again, I wasn't there, but I listened to the radio commentary. It was a tough listen because clubs then 4 or 5 weeks into the season, they've focused predominantly on conditioning during the close season, not maybe skills. That first month of the season has taken a lot out of the teams, and the standard drops a little bit. So I think for Catalan and Warrington to still be unbeaten, the only two teams that are, and even Steve McNamara saying after their game that he felt his team hadn't played well, but they've come away with an important home victory. I think we're now starting to look at maybe the second phase of the season, moving into Easter, and hopefully the standards will pick up a little bit, because I just think the last couple of weeks the product hasn't been as good.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, but it's a 27 round competition, isn't it? It's a long competition, you know, and once you get over that honeymoon of the first few weeks, realisation sets in that, you know, this is here till October. And so, you know, as people will always say, the competition's not won in the first few weeks, it's won towards the back end of the season.
But
that's
you can lose it in the first few weeks.
That's exactly what I was going to say, you can lose it. And getting off on the wrong foot, suddenly you're under pressure. But, you know, I think, as I said last week about Wakefield, I thought there were positive signs in their performance against Leeds. That must have been the case yesterday at Salford, albeit I understand Salford weren't at their best. So it is about, you know, even Catalan and Steve McNamara's comments, coaches will be saying that at this stage of the season. You're not going to expect them to say that was an all-round performance, perhaps with the exception of St Helens when they went down under, because teams will lift themselves for a single major game like that. So it is about building week to week and about building on performances. But if you can chalk the results up, it eases the pressure at this stage of the season.
Mark Sneed has now kicked winning drop goals in Golden Point against Wakefield with two different clubs, which must be the first player to do that. I was at the first one because that's when I was working at Wakefield, which tells you how long ago it was. But yeah, 14-13. Oh dear. Wakefield, 0 from 5. Well, fencing the 6 from 6 in the championship, so you know it balances itself out.
But you've scored.
We scored. Scored some points. So, you know, hopefully the Wakefield fans did take
I think
some
the one thing about Wakefield that we do know is that their defence is pretty solid, apart from one aberration at Wigan. They haven't been really overcome when they've played. Their defensive structures are pretty solid, and that is something you can build on. Attack will come. The problem they've got is that they've lost too many of the players in the spine that would help them score points. But I think their defensive resolve at Salford was what kept them in the game. And again, we talk about Hull have gone from conceding 61 week to very nearly beating St Helens. Salford have gone from scoring 61 week to not being able to put too many moves together. This so that inconsistency at this stage of the season is there, apart from Warrington and Catalan.
Yeah, and consistency is often a word that's thrown at referees, isn't it? But you know, you see that in the with the players. You know, the players aren't consistent, the teams aren't consistent. So, you know, to expect that equally match officials will be consistent as well is perhaps an ambitious target. You know, referees themselves will have dips in performances across a season that lasts months, not weeks. But you talk about...
Should we have another 8-point try, though?
Well, there was an 8-point try this weekend.
But in the Holland-St Helens game, should there have been an 8-point try?
I'm trying to remember what incident you're referring to.
Him in the...
Yes.
In the act of scoring?
I can't remember that one.
I think it's been mentioned in the disciplinary minutes that perhaps that should have been an 8-point try.
I'll have to go back and look at that one. I have seen the 8-point try in the Warrington game, and you know that looks on the face of it, the camera on the far side, it looks, you know, he does hit him high in the process of going over. That's what an 8-point try is there for.
Which was in fact a 6-point try because he didn't get.
He missed it. Yeah.
So we have to think of another word for it.
You know that players have the nude run at the end of the season if they don't score. I do wonder whether this is the referee's version of it this season.
We all have to get one in.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not.
We need to ask Kyle Aber what he thinks about that, because he doesn't like team songs. Does he like the
Is that because he can't sing?
I don't know. He's on Channel 4, isn't he? We know people at Channel 4.
Well, might see him on Saturday.
Well, you'll be there. I mean, I won't be there, but you'll be there. Consistent is not is what a team doesn't want. Consistent is good for refs, says Andy. I wish Wakefield were consistently good, you know, but you can have everything in life. What else has happened?
Result of the weekend: Wigan's wheelchair beating Halifax. I know we're big fans of the wheelchair, but that was a surprise. The defending champions, who were ahead at half time, and Wigan were dominant in the second half.
Great photo of Deck Roberts scoring a try, not in the paper, but on social media, if you want to see it. He doesn't look very happy. He looks as happy as he was at our table at the Wheelchair Awards the other week. Elsewhere, Leeds beat Warrington in the Super League, and London Roosters beat Hull FC in the Super League games this weekend, which kind of just randomly appeared. And Wakefield didn't lose by 100 in the Women's Super League Championship thing this week. That's a positive. Teddy Rutsman says Brixton Bulls are having their first ever Masters game at Aldershot on Fleet this week, Saturday, up the Bulls. See, that's a London based team not named London. Big after an area of London.
Big fan of Brixton and what they do. They're great with young kids. But then that's why I think you need, and obviously it'll become a topic of conversation with our guests, I'm sure. You need a focal point in London, and that focal point really has to be a Super League club, and that young kids have to have an aspiration to play against St Helens and Wigan. And you know, London's academy is struggling at the moment, the reserves are struggling, and I think that's because maybe we just haven't got the right strategy for London at the moment. But I do think others wouldn't agree that London is a fertile ground for us. We just haven't done it properly, so we shouldn't abandon it, we should actually do it properly.
You know, if a League One club had to pay a Championship club £400, hypothetically, to borrow a player, how much of that £400 do you reckon a player gets a week in the Championship? Just a hypothetical. We've got to go. Well, James has got to go. Do you want to stay and talk for a bit longer, Phil, or do you want to go?
There's Tunnock's caramel wafers. I'd stay for as long as that.
Because I feel the Championship people get annoyed if we don't stay on for a bit longer. But thanks for coming, James. People will think you've only been here for 10 years. then you'll disappear, and then you'll come back on the second. It's complicated. It's complicated this week. But
thank you for having me. I'll take my
your reward,
Caramel Bell, and thanks for your company.
If we mention them enough, do you think they'll sponsor us?
I mean, I've tried on social media. This is sponsoring a football tournament, you know, which was.
We'll keep going. That's the sponsorship that we. If we can bring that into the sport, we don't need IMG.
Dumbarton got to the final and everything. But we lost to Total Network Solutions.
All them, I'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
Basically, we spent an hour and longer talking to the owners of Keighley about their plans, their dossier for rugby league. So it went on longer than we thought. You'll see that after, once I've edited it, but on the podcast, it will come after this bit. Cruz Leamy.
Yes,
he's become the world's greatest hooker this week, which is interesting, because I'm not saying he's a bad player or anything. I mean, I'd probably take him at Wakefield if we could afford him, but we can't. But some of the Everything's overhyped with an inch of its life these days. And so much as he's obviously a very good player, fringes of the England squad for the World Cup and whatever. But coaches, strangely, don't always agree with their predecessors, nor fans, nor chief executives about how a player should or shouldn't be played.
I think he's clearly frustrated that he isn't the first choice hooker, that when he's fit, he isn't the starting number nine. It just seems strange a month into the season that he would deem that he's going to get that opportunity of starting somewhere else. I mean, clearly in Super League, we're bound by a pretty restricted salary cap. So I'm not sure there's too many clubs at this stage in the season that would be able to allocate money to buy him unless they wanted to do a player swap. So you look at the clubs that maybe are deficient in the hooking department where he would get a start, there aren't many. So then there's talk of his agent will get offers in the NRL. He may well, but will he be the starting hooker in the NRL? I would venture to say he might if there was an injury to start with, if somebody's looking for a hooker at this minute, because again, the salary cap is different over there. They could afford to invest in an import player who wouldn't cost them very much, comparatively speaking. They need them to go into the first team straight away. He would do a job for them. But then you'd have to say, well, in terms of the longer term, would he be a starting hooker in an NRL side? My guess is probably not. So, yeah, the timing of it is really strange. He had the whole pre-season with Rowan Smith. He clearly had the mass disappointment of not being selected for England. I think he felt he'd worked really hard last year, taking his team to the grand final. Felt perhaps he should have had a place in Sean Wayne's squad. Sean Wayne didn't see it that way. I think he's then done his pre-season. Season started. Jared O'Connor's been given the start on him. Corey Johnson's coming back fit. Where do I fit in? I think I'll try my luck elsewhere. It's just the timing seems odd to me.
And not just the timing in the season, the timing coming out just before the game on Thursday.
Well, I think it had been known about for a couple of days before. I think everybody was keeping very much tight-lipped on it. Players were interviewed about it afterwards, saying that we know nothing about it. I suspect that, you know, when somebody doesn't turn up for training or when somebody is told that they don't have to turn up for training and they're not there, the players do speak to each other. So, yeah, I think the onus is now on him to come to Leeds and say, this is the club I would like to go to. Leeds will then have a decision to say, well, you're contracted to the end of 2024, we are asking X transfer fee, or we would like a player in exchange. It can't be someone on a quota, because they haven't got a space. So you'd think that an NRL club would have to pay a transfer fee if that's where he was going. If it was a Super League club, Leeds may well say, right, well, we won't exercise our right, but we would like this player in exchange. Strange. And a shame, because he's a really, really good bloke.
Yeah, and I guess, does an NRL club need him enough to want to pay a transfer fee?
Again, it depends on the amount of money that you've got and how much he's going to cost you. And if you had to go out and buy a hooker from another NRL club, it's a relatively cheap option to pay a transfer.
Sorry, Kevin's on. He knows. Wigan's supposed to be interested. So,
well, again, I would say at the moment he's not going to displace Sam Powell as a first-choice hooker. So is it going to make any difference if he goes to Wigan? Would he start the game, which is what he wants, unless there's something in the environment at Leeds that he would prefer not to be there, which is eminently possible. Again, it'll raise the question of, and I'm not sure how much a relevant point it is, of captaincy. Because clearly he was very proud to be the captain last year. He was very proud to lead the team out most weeks. Obviously, clearly at the grand final, he came off the bench. But Leeds aren't having a captain this year. That may be something that he disagrees with. You know, he may want to know one way or the other if he is the captain. And if he is the captain, then that should promote him up the playing order. But Rowan Smith doesn't see it that way.
I think what we need to do one of these weeks is get in someone who's a former Leeds captain who once fell out with his coach. Because he might have a perspective.
Do we know anybody?
I don't know. He might have a perspective on that. The wheelchair team's got a captain.
May have his phone.
Wheelchair team's got a captain.
Yeah, and an interesting choice of captain, because it's not the England captain.
No, it's Jodie Boyd-Ward. She's going to come on the podcast, you said she would. Leeds, she's got pink hair. Leeds women don't have a captain. Does that mean Amy Hardcastle's going to be the captain? Because she's got pink hair as well.
There you go. I think they will have one the season kicks.
Yeah. season launch next week. Are you going?
I am. Are you
I
going?
I think it's me and you.
Oh, excellent. No wonder they were so keen. So I might be able to come. Oh, good.
I tell you what.
No, I don't think it's because
it's a good job because I'm working in Leeds that afternoon, but it starts in the morning and finishes by lunchtime, so I should be able to get from one part of Leeds to another part of Leeds.
I'm sure I can help
Fingers
you.
Fingers crossed that I can do that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I don't know what I'm going to ask half the people, because I don't know who half the people are going to be. Or are, indeed. And they won't know who I am, so that's even better. Elsewhere, nothing absolutely happening.
I think we should pay credit to the unity of cast. I mean, James just sort of mentioned it, they wanted it more. I think they needed it more. I think that was a result at home against the big city rivals that was going to...
Their cup final, yeah.
No, not necessarily. I think there was some disenchantment amongst their fans, and the way to win them back is to win that game. And there was... And the atmosphere is hostile to the opposition at Castleford, exactly as it should be. It was a little bit muted in the early stages of the game because I think there was a fear amongst some of the Castleford fans that this is a game we don't want to lose. We need to get a win on the board. And when they realised that the resolution that their team was playing with was going to bring them that win, that's when the atmosphere that you would expect kicked in. The second half, they forced Leeds to play one-out rugby and mocked it up, and their forwards made twice as many yards as Leeds did. I just think that they needed that result, and they got it and deserved it. And as we just spoke to James about, it's going to be what they... If they're going to build on that, they have to really play well this week as well.
When rugby league's great, it's great. And when it's not so great, everyone slags it off and says it's rubbish and the standard's crap and we're all rubbish these days and whatever. Do we have too high expectations sometimes?
No, we have too many games. And we play over too long. Again, going back to what James was saying, and I think that would have been the next question had he been able to stay, was do we get that level of inconsistency, because 27 rounds is too much. And clearly, what, you know, we're all watching a little bit of the NRL at the moment. That seems to be of a consistently high standard. They play less games.
Dolphins.
Big game in Brisbane this weekend. Can't wait.
That's going to be exciting. Championship, Featherstone. I wonder if Mark Campbell was happy with their performance, because he wasn't happy, was he? According to the social media.
Is that him, though, on the social
media? Is it?
I don't know. You can have a fake identity, I'm told.
One of those AI things.
It could be a bot.
It could be an AI Mark Campbell at Feb. I'm there next Thursday, Yorkshire Schools Cup Final.
Right. Have you got anybody playing in that you know?
My nephew's playing for, hopefully.
The new Gareth Gale?
Well, I don't know where he plays on the pitch these days. This will be his first... Because they don't play 13 aside, do they, until they get to school age. But the games are every hour, so I don't know how long the game's going to be. So
excellent. Good luck to him.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Who's he playing for?
Is it Freeston? I think they're another Outwood school these days.
Right.
So following in my footsteps, obviously, because they're a great Outwood player of the past. But playing against John Centimer Academy from Hull.
Oh, excellent.
So that's Normanton versus Hull. That'll be a battle in Featherstone.
He's on the big stage already?
Yeah.
Good lad.
So I've got, I won't say anything bad about Featherstone. But they won, so they're 6-6. Toulouse, 5-6. It's actually an interesting game against Widnes, with late scores and drama and controversy and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think John Key was too impressed, was he, on the post-match detail?
Kind of game, I think, that would have been a good one to put on the sportsman or whatever.
Yes.
Because we don't know how that deal works. But Bradford beat Sheffield Eagles. Mark Aston doesn't like Oddsall. I think this is a bit rubbish.
Although, again, I think that's a great result for Bradford, because we shouldn't underestimate how well Sheffield have started the season.
Four wins from six. Yeah. That's a good start.
And winning at home as well, which is, again, a good way of getting all your fans on side.
Carson's watching the battle again. He's watching us after. So that's fair enough.
At Dewsbury.
It's just like the olden days when Mount Pleasant was closed. Good luck to Batley getting you. Floodlight sorted anyway. Halifax beat Keighley. More in Keighley to come. London Broncos, or should it be Wimbledon, beat Newcastle Thunder. And Whitehaven beat York. And that's the result of the
day in the Championship.
Especially York were 26 on a handicap. So, that's not good, is it? But League One, Doncaster beat North Wales.
That's three good results for Doncaster, because they played three of the teams that they would expect to be coming up against in or around the playoffs. And should we say three of the teams from the more traditional areas as opposed to through the expansion team. So that is another good result for Doncaster. I think it's since Carl Hall became a colony, the form's picked up.
Hunslet, which of course we're all big fans of here, they won at London Scholars 66-22. Nothing any great surprise there. Dewsbury running at Workington, that was on the Sportsman. I didn't watch it because I was out. 25-6.
Mother's Day, that's why.
Yeah. And Rochdale Hornets beat Midlands 32-24, but that's sounded a close game. 14-12 at half time to Rochdale, so I think Midlands have got plenty to take out of that one in the bizarre competition that is League One that no one knows what to do with. But this week, Cornwall London Scholars.
Okay, so somebody's going to get some points.
Yeah, the O has to go, as they say. Cornwall only played one game so far this year.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because this is an unbalanced league, isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah.
And also, if you get knocked out of the cup early, you...
Yeah. We mentioned the wheelchair games earlier. I wish I could have seen that. We're getting Halifax games. It's only the belter. What was the score in the end?
59-45.
You've got drop goals and everything. Mm-hmm. So... It's
two French men, one a French international, one an English international, playing for Halifax.
Yeah.
And I think they were intent on starting the defence of their crown with a win, but Wigan are going to be up there amongst it this year, clearly.
Which is good.
Which is great.
As former champions. You've got to have competition. You've got to have teams who can put together good games of entertaining rugby league to watch.
An equalisation of talent at the highest level amongst as many teams as you can.
Your women signed any more players this week?
You can ask the mighty
Valkyrie. The Valkyrie, the guy on.
They've made Sinead Peach captain.
Yes, should have been in the. She was like the female Cruz Lehman.
Yeah.
But more controversial.
Hooker that didn't get selected.
Yeah, far more controversial. Could get back to Mickey McAloran again. Is there any more news? Apart from all the going back to Boundary Park, that's, I guess, good news, I guess. I don't know, but at least they...
I think what we're going to probably talk about with the guys from Keighley, who are almost publicly dissenting voices, we may find out that they've got more support than we think. Everybody's talking about grading. I know that we sort of mentioned it last week, and... we need to see how that plays out. My only concern, and clearly, we've no idea what they're going to say, is that I think they are purporting a position that harks back to a different era. I'm not sure it's going to address the issues as they currently are for the sport at the moment. And I would hope that IMG... have been brought into the sport because of their level of expertise, and that will not suit everybody. But at some point, the sport has to say, we all need to move in a direction. And I just hope that they won't try and prevent it moving from a direction that inexorably it has to move in. But they are entitled, and we will hear their point of view.
They are given, very much given, the floor. So there's something else I was going to mention, but now I can't remember. Magazine's out, that's good.
Two controversial articles. One about transgender athletes and whether or not they should be banned from playing, and what is the data and research behind that that allows that decision to be made. One about the likelihood over time of rugby league and rugby union coming together on the field to be played as rugby league.
I mean, it was very funny, wasn't it, when the BBC tweeted the Scottish fella scoring a try, and all the replies were
every week.
Tom Johnson,
every
Tom week. Makinson, some bloke who plays in League One you've never heard of. Brilliant. I mean, we do have a bit of a chip on our shoulders, but on that point, it's a well-deserved chip on our shoulders.
But also, I do think that, people can read or disagree with the article. It's there as a thought-provoking talking point. This is the first time ever when we can talk about the product being rugby league, that rugby union has some issues it has to address, because litigation will force it to address it, that it almost has to be rugby league. And if it is, that puts us in a very different position historically to one that we've ever been in before.
The one question I forgot to ask our friends from Keighley,
who we haven't interviewed yet,
Kai Garcia and Ryan O'Neill, was going to be, So what if you lose the vote? What do you do? Do you become a rugby union club? Do you?
No, they have to stay with. They have to fall in line.
But here they are, telling us about what they're going to do, and I can't remember how I introduced them. So if you're watching the programme live, you won't see it. If you listen to the podcast, you will. But if you are watching live, you'll see it later when I've edited it, because I've got to edit it. But yeah, thanks for watching or listening. And stay. And we never ask, we don't ask any difficult questions, do we?
We never have in the years we've been doing it. But.
Which means, gentlemen, that the first question I'm going to ask you goes straight in there, because why? What is the reason for your plan? Why have you put your heads above the parapet as the only people willing to almost come with a different plan to the one IMG are coming with?
Because we've, from my point of view and my family's point of view, we've been here before. So my dad was chairman of Keighley Cougars back in the mid-1990s when the whole Super League wars were going on and Sky came in and invested in the sport, and they were going to restructure, they're going to merge clubs, and they were going to create clubs in various parts of the country that didn't already have them. So that at the time, Keighley Cougars had been promoted to what would have been, I think they called it Premiership or Championship at the time. There was no Super League. And we spent, my dad's and his board have spent a lot of money to build an amazing team. They just, actually 2 weeks before, I think, the Super League was announced, they just signed Daryl Powell from Sheffield Eagles. It cost them $135,000 in a transfer fee and a shockingly big salary. And back in 1995, that was, I mean, it's a lot now, but it was a huge amount then. And they had a full-time squad. They'd gone full-time in the preparation for getting to that top league. I think they were spending about $1.2 million on salaries, which, if you adjust for inflation, is a significant amount now. So they'd really geared up. They've got loads of sponsorship. They had blue-chip companies who were going to sponsor them. And then this Super League came in, and they were like, Keighley, you've got to merge with Halifax and Bradford and whatever. And it's going to be a West Yorkshire team, or it's going to be a Bradford team, and you're just going to be a feeder club. And it just killed everything. And it then led to at the time, actually, the Cougars voted, I think they actually voted for it, which with hindsight was probably a mistake, because they got quite a bit of flak for doing that. But they voted for it in the intention that they would be able to then work with the RFL at the time to make it into a fairer competition. But in the end, it didn't work out that way. And we got stuck down in the second division, I think it was. So, and then as a result, they couldn't finance the huge spend that they had. They lost all the sponsors. And there was no opportunity for them really to go up. So my dad then retired. He couldn't do any more. He broke his heart, I'd say. He put his entire life into it for 5 years, put a lot of money into it. And it obsessed our entire family at the time. And then to be kicked out, and then for it to basically just to whittle away and decline, my dad then left and moved to Australia, basically, because he felt so demoralized, and he just needed to get away. And he then went on a 20-odd year absence, diaspora to Australia. And then we took it over in 2019, all enthusiastic, put a load of money into it, got great players, got promoted in 2022. And then suddenly we're like, it's repeating itself. So, you know, similar to how it was in 1995-96, my dad and his team then and his board saw the opportunities in a restructured rugby league, in money coming in and making it into a more exciting sport. But they didn't like the way that at the time the RFL were proposing the mergers and these sort of clubs that were plonked out in various parts of the country that just didn't have any real sort of basis for it. So they're fighting on the same basis in some ways that we're fighting now, which is, yes, it needs to change. We're 100% for change. You know, the sport needs radical reform, but it's got to be reformed the right way. And we just feel, looking back to 1995 and then the licensing that was brought in the early noughties, we just feel that these proposals aren't the right thing way to go about it. Some of them are, look, 100%, some of them are, but the inequity in it, which is fundamentally causing us a problem, is where we would say, we don't agree with this. We don't want to be the naysayers. You know, that's something I really want to get away from, is Keighley just saying, oh no, we don't want to change, we want to keep it all the same. We're not saying that. We are a progressive club, and we see that things need to change and need to improve. At the end of the day, this is a fantastic sport which isn't capitalizing on what it should be doing. So
just
we're saying
devil's advocate on that for a moment. It raises two questions. One is, should there be minimum standards? And if so, how would that affect Keighley as they currently are, and how long it would take you to become a sustainable Super League team if those minimum standards were brought in? And the second point, I suppose, is the proposals now are not the ones from 1995. And if you look back historically at the idea of merger, it was almost like the impossible to get through the idea of moving to summer and the Super League concept coming in, that the mergers part was almost never going to happen. Whereas this, that isn't being proposed at the moment. This is giving, again, playing the devil's advocate, clubs like yourselves, the template to become the best you can be. So in principle, is there anything wrong with that?
No, and you see, actually, when Ryan mentioned a lot of the past, you know, that it just feels like we have been there before. But even if you take that aside, what we are against is the anti-competitiveness of the whole proposal. You know, you winning that £1 million game, it becomes irrelevant. IMG said themselves, when we asked that question to there in the meeting, when we had the council meeting to approve that or not, you know, so meaning that if you win that game, it doesn't necessarily mean you will go up. So imagine if the loser of that game then goes up. How that is sport, how that is fair in a sense, the game itself became too complicated with these rules. And to your point in saying that there should be minimum standards, we do support that. And actually, they are already in place. You know, the RFL, as of now, let's say Keighley Cougars wins this year's championship, we would not meet the minimum standard to go to Super League because A, the capacity of our stadium wouldn't be the minimum there for Super League. We don't run a women's team. We don't run a reserves team. We don't have an academy team. So that's when it gets a bit misconstrued that, you know, it feels like we are the negative guys saying no, but 80% of those proposals, you know, we totally are behind that you have to have a better product, you have to have better facilities. You know, I think in the past, all this money that Sky has given this club, especially the Super League, you know, where has it all been? Because you go to some of the places, you know, it's a decrepit stand or, you know, the standards were there, but they were not enforced. And for us coming from, okay, yeah, we want to have this minimum standards, but it's just like, why you guys haven't done your homework in enforcing them? Because right now we wouldn't be able to go to Super League. So it's our decision. If you want to push for Super League, okay, let's make our facilities better. So it contradicts themselves when they are saying that they are raising the minimum standards when these are already in place.
I think it's more about enforcement, as you say, rather than raising or lowering them. I think with the IMG involvement in the sport and the fact now that Rugby League Commercial as a board is endorsing IMG's proposals, then I think this is now enforceable. You would be absolutely right to say that the reason the sport made a mess of previous licensing agreements is they didn't enforce it. But how long do you reckon it would take you to become a sustainable Super League club? Because, again, playing devil's advocate, should Keighley and the way that the club is structured at the moment, which is clearly improving on an annual basis under yourselves, should that hold back clubs that are more progressive?
I think fundamentally, it's got to be about, it comes back to fairness. So if we go for it and we want to get promoted, we understand we've got to invest in our facilities because I don't think, as Kelly said, I don't think we are. I'd love to think we were, but we're not going to get promoted this season. We shouldn't go up because we don't have the facilities in place. And we'd be the first to hold our hands up and say, right, guys, you know, we've got a wooden stand that seats 800 people. Some of it's rotten. We're not ready for Super League. We totally get that. And we support that part of the proposals. We think, you know, going to a ground that is crumbling is not Super League. It just is everything against what that Super League is about. But you should be given the opportunity. And if you're not given the opportunity, it is impossible for us to go out and get money into the club to actually implement what they want us to do. So if we go to a sponsor tomorrow and say, right, guys, we need £500,000, we want to cover our terrace. We want to build a great gantry for Sky TV if we get promoted and all the rest of it. They're going to say, but are you going to, have you got any chance of going up? I'm going to say, well, no, because we haven't got the catchment area. We've got no way of paying £450,000 for LED boards around the ground. So, no, we're not going to go up. But can you do it anyway, just in case they might, at some point in the future, we might be able to afford those LED boards. We might be able to claim that we belong to Skipton and the Yorkshire Dales. It's all very tenuous to say that. I'd like to say, yeah, we're North Yorkshire. We're not North Yorkshire. We're Keighley. You know, we are a town. We can have a bit of a bigger catchment area, but we're never going to be competing with the likes of Leeds in terms of catchment. So we're never going to get those points. So how can we ever get to the standards we need to be to get to Super League if the opportunity isn't there for us? And I'm saying that not just for us. I'm saying that for other clubs as well, because you've got to bring, it's a business. You've got to bring investors along with you. And if there is no opportunity, how on earth would anybody invest in you? They just wouldn't. And from our point of view, I mean, we have to do the investment for the club where we are now, because, you know, it doesn't wash its face in terms of income and expenditure. Why would we want to pump more money in to get to the top if they're just going to say, well done, chaps, here you are, here's a little medal around your neck, crack on and you're in championship again. There would be no incentive for us to do that, and we wouldn't do it. And it just takes away that kind of that passion that you need in sport. But fundamentally, and as Cowie rightly pointed out, we are not saying there should not be minimum standards. There absolutely should be minimum standards, and 100% support that proposal from IMG. As you know, Cowie mentioned earlier, the standards are already there. They've been there for years. They haven't been enforced. You need to enforce them. Good luck, IMG, to do that. We'll support you 100%. But you've still got to give clubs the opportunity, if they have meet those standards in terms of facilities and sustainability of the business and the women's team and all the rest of it, if you've got that and you win that league, you should go up. And I don't see why you should be barred from that. And under the current proposals, clubs like us would be.
Can I ask, you said you by and large agree with, say, 80% of the IMG proposal. What would be alternative proposals for Keighley in response to those areas of the proposal that you don't agree with? How do you see that you need to sort of reform the game, as you've said?
One of the things that stood out, and we are very, you know, very much against, and we have been quite vocal, being the catchment area, you know, location. That shouldn't dictate that someone scoring. To be honest, the whole proposal as it is, you know, I said at the meeting, you know, you made something very easy, very complicated, because it should be, just like Ryan said, you know, it should be easy. You win that minimum pound game, okay, you hit the criteria, you go up. But what will become is a closed shop for those 12, but Super League, really, as it is now. So the catchment area, just addressing the first of the problems that we think, you know, that's not fair, that's not a competition that is fair. They have had this obsession with, you know, these expansion areas, and again, that's what gets misconstrued when I touch the word expansion, because I had to point out and I said, look, I'm going to upset a few clubs here, London Scholars, London Broncos, Cornwall, Midlands Hurricanes and Newcastle. I said, if you look at data, and because IMG said the whole presentation was data driven and they had conducted survey for the last 5 months, and, you know, it doesn't take anyone much longer than to go to a London Broncos game, and you see that, you know, it's 300, 400 people in attendance, if that. And again, it's not us being against expansion. The suggestion that we would propose is create a competition down south, you know, involve London, because we think it's a vanity project, because everyone thinks that the solution of the sport, how you increase the sport's attendance and the exposure, is touching the capital, you know, because you have 9 million. That suddenly, if you plunk a team here in London, everybody will simply just convert as magic, you know, that they become rugby league addicts. And it has been proven for the last 20 years, it does not work. So the solution would be create a competition down south, let London organically grows. And one of the things that also we pointed out, the sense of community that the sport rugby league is, you know, it's there. It's related to your image as the town, as you know, it's the rivalry that you have amongst towns like Keighley and Bradford. So calling themselves London, which again, you know, IMGs, these marketing giants that were meant to know what they are doing, you know, the simple fact that they did not see that London doesn't work simply because of the name. You know, there is no identity of London. London is 9 million people. We ourselves, we live in London. I don't identify myself as London. We live in Soho, for example. If there was a team called Soho or Central, well, it would have to be more of a neighborhood area. You would then catch the attention. And I would actually go to a game because I would be thinking, oh, I'm going to support my Soho team. So that sense of identity that all these clubs, all these towns, and we said, you know, the heartlands of the clubs, that's where actually the sport is working, you know. You should look at that and replicate that.
I mean, you only have to look at the most successful sport in this country, which is obviously soccer. And there's a lot of clubs in London. None are called London. You've got your Fulhams, you've got your Tottenhams, you've got your Arsenals, you've got your Chelsea, you've got your, you know, all the rest of them. London is an amalgamation of conurbations, really, which people identify with. So I have friends who live in Southwark. Southwark is their place. It's not London. You know,
isn't that a cosmetic issue that clearly when we started playing professional rugby league in the South in 1980, it was Fulham. And Fulham were getting 10,000, 12,000. There is a rugby league market there. So I guess on a broader debate rather than the viability of the current Broncos, and it could well be that they may well become over a short period of time Wimbledon, because obviously they've moved into that facility.
And that would make sense.
It would make sense. The two questions that are more generalised, promotion relegation has been part of rugby league for less of the time than you would think, because most of the time we have had a championship either with all the clubs in one division or playoffs, or promotion relegation hasn't always been part of rugby league, therefore it doesn't always have to be. But when we have had it, it's generated a boom and bust culture. So clubs, for example, again, with the greatest respect to what you're doing at Keighley, like Keighley would be promoted for a year, but it wouldn't be sustainable. They would then go down, and that's actually more harmful for the club than going up in the first place. So do we need to be this slave to traditional promotion and relegation? Because we never have. And the other question, I guess, that comes from what you were just saying is, the sport actually isn't sustainable in what is its traditional areas, that the ageing supporter base would tell you that at some point your traditional roots are going to die, so you have to plant some new trees somewhere else. So should we not say that expansion is actually something the sport has to look at to survive?
I think I totally agree. So in terms of expansion, you expand correctly. It hasn't been done correctly. So we had Simon Johnson here last week. He came and wanted to chat to us about our objections and our counter proposals. And the fundamental problem for me with rugby league at the moment is marketing. I don't think it even has a marketing department. I mean, you look at TikTok, which is the most popular sort of young person social media at the moment. The rugby league doesn't even have a TikTok channel. Now that small thing there shows to me the fundamental problem of the sport. So my proposal to Simon was, you're giving all this money to the clubs, the Super League clubs. You're giving them, what, 1.5 million a year, which is just literally just going down a drain. It's not improving the sport at all. Keep some of that back. Keep it. Build an incredible marketing department within the rugby league and create regional marketing divisions. So, yes, you create a regional marketing department for London with a marketing director who builds that area. Same with Newcastle, the North East. You can get a Gateshead team, a Newcastle team, a Durham team, you know, Cornwall. You go down to Cornwall, and you have these regional marketing areas which say, right, we're going to work with you. We're going to tell you what to do. You don't know what, you know, marketing is a science. And if you have the right people with the right brains and the funding behind it, you can then start to create something. What they're doing is they're just expanding by saying, right, we're going to have a club here, there, and there. We're going to give them a few quid and crack on. And it hasn't worked because they're not doing it properly. But I'm 100% for expansion. I would love to have a competition here in London where I can go and watch London Broncos. We won't say London because, as Kerry said, that's the fundamental problem. But let's say you've got...
Wimbledon, I guess, to Soho.
Yeah. I mean, that would be great. That would be really exciting. I'd say to Kerry on a weekend when we haven't got some Googles, let's go and watch that. but I'm not going to go and watch London Broncos against Barrow because there's going to be nobody there. There's no competition. So I'm saying expansion, 100% we support it. We don't think it's being done properly. This club needs to stop donating money to the Super League clubs, which is what it's doing at the moment, and it needs to hold some back and it needs to put the money into the right places, which is marketing the sport. And it comes back to your second point, which is about the grassroots, sort of the heartlands, that, yeah, it's dying off. If you're also marketing in those places as well, you're going to get the young people to get involved. The trouble is, it's not marketing. You turn up to a game. We went to Wakefield and Featherstone as a friendly. It wasn't a nice environment. It wasn't a great place to go to. It wasn't somewhere that I can see young people going and say, oh, yeah, this is a really great day out. It wasn't. And it should be, and it could be, and it just needs to be marketed properly. And that's just getting people who come from a different perspective, which is, you know, in a way like we did. We came in 2019, took over at Googers. I'd been away from rugby for 20-odd years. I was 15 when I kind of, my dad left and walked away from it. And Carrie'd never been to it. And we came, we had fresh ideas, said, this needs to be an entertaining, fun day out. And people will come, they're going to think, oh, wow, there's a bit of a buzz around here. And then they're going to watch the game and think, wow, this is actually a really good game. Football actually is so boring when you think of it. This is so fierce and, you know, all these points being scored and it's exciting. And they're going to go, well, I'm going to come again next weekend. And that's how you grow this sport. And that is where the Rugby League and IMG are not understanding. They need to focus the money they've got on marketing the sport and not just donating it to Super League clubs, which is what they're doing.
Isn't that part even of IMG's digital strategy, though, which is about to be rolled out, and why we've had this 12-year association with IMG in the first place? Because we've identified what we're not good at. And again, putting it back to you, probably in the case of being a devil's advocate, doesn't the sport need to be united at this time of all times? And that to have dissent, as it's seen within the ranks with alternative proposals, isn't going to help IMG roll out their digital strategy or come up with a new brand image or come up with minimum standards that clubs have to have on match days? Aren't you thwarting what you actually purporting is what the sport needs?
I don't think so, because then we pretty much live in a dictatorship. If someone comes along and tell you this is the new plan, and you're saying that, you know, the sport should be united, so all 36 teams should have just raised the hands and clapped, then I think that then it's what I say, it's a dictatorship. You know, just because IMG comes with a pedigree that, you know, they are marketing experts, you know, because they done really successfully, and, you know, they have the credits there. But it doesn't mean that you can simply exchange their mark. We have a business ourselves, you know, when we don't speak empty knowledge on these matters, because a lot of our business require marketing experts. So we have had a company for 6 years now. We are successful. We're trading in different countries. And the fundamentals there, that when even you say, isn't that cosmetic, you know, addressing that London Broncos should be called something else. Well, when you partner with a giant like IMG, and if they are not really seeing these fundamental silly problems, just like you said, you pointed out being a cosmetic problem, that's very easy. But yes, they have not understood and they have not addressed, but they are addressing things. Oh, if you have a big screen in your stadium, you're going to get 0.125 points. If you have LED hoardings around the ground, you get another 0.125 points. It just shows that they don't have a grasp of the sport, and that's why we have to avoid that. That's not being, you know, in detriment to the sport. You're raising your concerns. I think that's a good thing for anything in society. If you were just stand there and clap, then, you know, we might as well just become, I don't know, North Korea. That's the wrong statement, but
fundamentally for me, the USP of this sport at the moment, and it's on its knees, let's not make any bones about that, the sport is on its knees. The USP is it's a town sport, and you only have to look at the government's policies on levelling and putting all the rest of it. There is nothing going on in these towns. If this sport is marketed properly and marketing is funded, you've got clubs in towns that have got nothing else going on, and you've got a whole load of people there who've got not much to do. They've got no cinemas anymore. They've all closed. The bowling alleys have gone.
High street.
No one goes to pubs anymore because, you know, can't drink and drive and they can't smoke and all the rest. We've all heard these reasons for people sort of not having much to do living in a town, that rugby league club could be central to that community because it can be exciting, it could be visionary, it could be something that people actually have a miserable week and think, actually, this week I'm really looking forward to the game with, you know, Featherstone against Castleford. And if it's marketed properly, they go and have a fantastic day out for 15 quid. That is going to be something positive for that town. And I've said it before, for example, if we got to Super League, the first thing we'd do is we'd get a shop in the town centre. There are loads of shops in our town centre, like there are in town centres all across the country. And if we've got people coming in and queuing up to buy tickets and coming to see the players because they're in the shop and all the rest of it, you're going to have other shops that thinking, actually, I want a shop next door to that Cougar shop because they're getting loads of footfall. And before you know it, that town centre is suddenly getting a few more traders in it because they've got footfall again. At the moment, there's no reason for footfall. So for me, IMG and the rugby league should say, right, let's see what we've got going for us. What we've got going for us is it's a town sport. It's weak because it's got no investment and people aren't coming through the turnstiles. So what do we need to do? We need to make it exciting. We need to get people coming through the turnstiles. We need to market it. We need to tell these clubs how to make an entertaining day out beyond just what's going on the pitch. When we get those people through those doors for a reasonable price, I think at the moment we went to Halifax yesterday and the amount of our fans who were complaining it cost them 80 quid for, you know, two of them and a party. I mean, it's too much. It's too expensive. It needs to be 15 quid like we charge. It should be less. I mean, I applaud Batley for trying. I think it's probably too risky to do that. But if you can get the marketing right, get the sponsors in, you get more people interested in coming through turnstiles, you can lower your prices, you get more people in. Suddenly the whole thing's succeeding and then the town succeed. And before you know it, that little sport of rugby league, which was on its knees, has suddenly become very successful away from the cities, because cities are tied up with soccer. You know, people in cities who watch soccer cannot afford to go and watch another sport. You know, it's very expensive to watch soccer. So focus on the towns, but make it a fun, entertaining day out. And you will then get people through the turnstiles and the sport then resurrects.
Again, another example that, you know, so simple to understand, yet IMG haven't touched on that. You know, the whole marketing here that we said. And when Simon Johnson came to see us, we did say, use a silly example. Look at Super Bowl. I think everyone around the globe heard and were talking about the Super Bowl because they have a massive celebrity, you know, doing their final game. The exposure that Rihanna did was all in you know, for the sports. What do we have? You know, even the Challenge Cup, that it creates that buzz around the, although it's the community within the sport, you know, but why not? We said to Simon, I said, why don't you actually hold 100,000 from all Super League teams? So rather than giving 1.5 million, you know, if you held 100,000 of all the 12 teams, you have 1.2 million, get a bloody Lady Gaga, you know, that people will come to the grand final of the Super League just in itself to watch Lady Gaga. But what then you do is you are making people interested in the game because they will come, they will find the sport, because there is not one person that would find the sport boring, because it's an amazing pro. I am Brazilian myself. I came from, you know, soccer through and through country. You know, when I watched our first match at the Cougars, you know, I thought, oh my God, when you see this 80 minutes that, you know, it goes from your team winning and then it might totally change, but you always have something going on, you know, in 90 minutes of football, you might score once, or most games are nil, isn't it? So it's boring. But then what we said as well, having a Lady Gaga there, you're going to feel that stadium, you know, the attention that then you would generate for the sport. And then your Sky deals that, you know, they are reducing every year because they say, look, the sport, you know, is dying. There is not much attention. You know, then the likes of Sky Sports, they would actually be paying more attention and would be more interested in giving you a good deal, because they know that every year there would be a massive event where, you know, Lady Gaga comes, Beyoncé comes, or whoever that might be, that it just these fundamentals, you said yourself, they're a cosmetic thing that they should be working on, and they're not. So for me, I said, you guys seem just clueless.
And it's not just what Kerry said in terms of filling that stadium. You would fill that stadium. Most people will be going not just to watch a Rugby League Challenge Cup final, but you'd be going to watch a bit of a pop concert, and you would pack it. So that, first of all, that looks fantastic on TV. You're going to get the news. But how many people on social media are going to start sharing that? And suddenly rugby league is shared through millions, if not billions of people around the globe who've never even heard of the sport. You know, that one investment in something like that, as silly as it sounds, could give so many rewards for the sport. And it's not, it's a lot of money. But when you look at the amount of money that's just been wasted on these Super League clubs by just donating Sky money out, keep a little bit back for something like that, and it would make such a difference.
Doomsday scenario. That Sky, as you say, and you've written in the document, are disinterested. What if they do walk away? What happens then if there is no millions of pounds to give to clubs to throw away on not very good rugby league players year in, year out?
We tapped that as well with Simon, right? Because in the 90s, you see, that was before Super League was created. So they were not addicted to their money. And when we even address the problem, you know, we are two hostages of a TV deal. You know, like you said, if they pull out, what would happen? Clubs as a business, as we have our own business, you have to be profitable enough, you know, that you are not counting on a check written by TV rights. Even though all sports get TV rights, that shouldn't be the essential and the fundamental part of you, how you run your business, because like you said, that might go away one day. And just doing, again, just an exercise that we said to Simon, you know, if you take an average attendance of a Super League team, they have 6,000 easily to most of the games. And again, that's a low average because normally they get 8,000 to 10,000. But let's go with the lowest one, 6,000, multiply that by £25. You get 150,000 each game throughout the season, 11 games that you play. You make that itself 1,650,000 for the 1.6 million, you know, in that season alone, just through your gates. Then you have your sponsorship money. We as a championship club, you know, we just came to championship. We make 200,000 in sponsorship. When you sell that club that is going to be on Prime TV, you know, every week in and out, they should be making $1 million easily on sponsorship, because everyone would love to be on TV, and the exposure that it gives, you know, you give that national image to thousands of people that live here in the UK, millions, you know. So just with these two factors, that sponsorship money and 11 games through the gates, you would get 2.6 million. When you have a salary cap of 1.2 million in the Super League, do you understand how this is, it's sustainable without the money? So actually, when you add this Sky money, the 2.6 million with 1.5 million, Super League clubs are making 4 million, assuming, you know, that that's what they take in sponsorship. How they have not improved with 4 million, it's just crazy.
And then you've got all the ancillary income. So you've got your, you know, your merchandise, you've got your bar revenues, you've got your catering revenues, you've got your hospitality revenues. You know, from my point of view, Super League are basically being given money. And because they're being given money, it can make them lazy. If you're lazy, why would you go the extra mile? Like we get, in league, when we were getting £3,000 a month from Sky, it didn't even pay the electric bill. So we've never been on a life support for Sky money. For us, it's nice to get £3,000 a month, but when you see the overheads we have to pay out, £3,000 a month is a pittance, really. So, and I'm glad about that, because I would hate to be wedded to that Sky money, because I do believe it's going down. And I do believe that broadcasting generally is going down as we get more and more of these streaming channels. You know, the more you've got, the less money there is, because, you know, it's a supply and demand thing. So Super League fundamentally should be covering it, washing its face. It should be making money, as Kerry just said.
The maths are there.
Yeah. So the Sky money isn't essential, or it certainly shouldn't be essential. Let's put it that way. Maybe for some clubs it is, it shouldn't be. If they're getting 5,000-6,000 through their turnstiles and on a 1.2 million salary cap, it should pay its way. Championship gets very little money from Sky. League One gets a pittance. So the club should not be wedded to it. And if they're not wedded to it, it makes them sit down and think, right, we've got to start thinking outside the box here. We've got to be entrepreneurial. How the hell do we increase our revenues? And that's what we've had to do. We've had to sit down and think, how do we increase our revenues? We need to get a better deal with a brewery. We need to get a better deal with our sponsors. We need to go out to our sponsors. We've built a digital package for our sponsors, where we've built a digital marketing department within the Cougars that provides digital marketing to our sponsors, who don't necessarily have the resources in their own companies to market themselves on social media. So we say, we can do that. We'll do it for you. Give us a sponsorship package in return. You're not just giving us a check and then coming down to watch the game. We're giving you something back. We're giving you something tangible back. And that, the sponsor's like, oh, that's fantastic. We used to just, you know, club management coming to us and saying, oh, give us some sponsorship and you get 2 free tickets. We're not doing that because we've got to think beyond that. And that's what clubs who are given money, as I call the Sky donation, don't need to do that because they've just got a check coming in every month and they can just, you know, waste it away. And that is why, after 20-odd years of Super League, the club is on its knees because they haven't had to think and be entrepreneurial. And that, for me, if Sky money goes down, I think we've got to live with it and say, right, clubs, man up now.
And I still tapping into the, you know, a TV deal that might not come. We said, actually, it would be more beneficial to the sport if we were in all free-to-air, you know, go to BBC, say, actually, no, Sky, we don't want you with the current deal that we have because it's not beneficial. Go for a thought process that you're going to increase the exposure of the sport. Go to BBC and say, guys, here is the sport for free. You don't need to pay us anything, because what would then do in favor of the clubs is, I could go to a sponsor, you know, we could go to our current sponsors, and we are going to sell that, the dream that everybody wants. Here, free marketing for you. Every weekend, Kifli Cougars is going to be on TV, where your company, so if you sign us a check of 100,000, 200,000, every Sunday, you're going to be on TV. So imagine the exposure if you have a banner there, you know, if the stadium is named certaincompany.com, you know, you are being televised to millions of people. And that's when then the crowd, actually, you are converting a few people that on a Sunday, they might be watching telly and they come across, oh, rugby league. They will see that it's such an interesting product and as a sport is entertaining that they might think, oh, actually, I love the club that I watch, Bradford versus Featherstone. You know, I might go down to the ground next weekend because it was such a buzzing atmosphere. It was really incredible. So you are doing a favor, really, to your crowds, because, you know, meaning you being on TV doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, people will not go for the turnstiles. You are generating so much interest that you actually are captivating the
You're
crowd.
Exciting the local people. Yeah.
And people that have not heard of the sport. And that's what fundamentally, even when Ryan then says about marketing, you know, do we even have a commercial going on national TV? Because I see loads, when we are watching Valley, you know, you see loads of things about the next premier game that is going to be broadcast. You know, where is rugby league? If we live down in London, you know, our friends, when they say, oh, you're going to go to the club this weekend, they never even heard about rugby league down in London. Yet we are pursuing this London dream, you know, and again, do organically, do you know, let the game. And even you said a point earlier, you know, saying, is it the people they're watching, they're dying. You know, the crowds that we have, it's an older generation, you know. But isn't it easier to educate and bring up the grandkids and the kids of those people, the crowds? You know, it's so much easier to bring new blood into the sport if you already have the footprint there. You know, what you even said, you say, oh, doesn't the sport need to go to, you know, to go to new markets? Yes, it does. Obviously, it does. But to totally forget and ignore the heartland that you have already, you know, a whole town behind you. Make it entertaining, like Fran said. And we have done that ourselves. If you come to Cougar Park, you know, obviously, I'm selling what we do. But it's an entertaining day. You come, you have fun. We have the singers, we have, you know, a Zorb ball during halftime. So it's always fun. And people, we do feel like people are there to watch the game fundamentally, but they stay until 10 p.m. because we have a DJ in the bar. We make a party out of it. So everybody looks forward to their Sunday.
But I think also you only have to look now at Lee with Derek Beaumont. He's doing the right thing. He's getting singers on before the match. He's making it a fun day out. He's doing, you know, he's built a fabulous team and spent a lot of money on that, which all credit to him. But he's also, he understands you've got to make that into an entertaining experience beyond the rugby. And you know, I hope that, you know, I hope he does succeed, because he, you know, I don't know, we don't know Derek, we've never actually met him, but I just watch from afar and I think, yeah, you're doing the right things there, and that's the way the sport should go. And it can do it itself without IMG coming and saying, right, guys, you know, again, we're going to knock your points off of this, points off of that, points off that, points off that. They just need to come and say, right, clubs, you've got to start marketing. You've got to get modern. You've got to give an entertaining day out. And they should be coming to us and saying, this is what you should do, rather than saying, we're not going to let you in because you haven't got that. We're not going to let you in because you haven't got that. We're not going to let you in because you're a town. That, for me, is just wrong. And that is why this sport has had multiple second chances, and I'm worried that eventually they're going to run out of second chances. And this is another one of those experiences and attempts to reform it in the wrong way.
Derek Beaumont wouldn't be able to build the team that he's currently got, though, without the Sky money. So it is a double-edged sword. You have to have both. I don't think you can cut off the Sky money and expect to have a product that we're all talking about that has the best quality athletes who are attracted, because you have to pay those wages to get them and to retain them and to possibly bring them over from Australia. So you do have to have some degree of external televisual funding. We would not survive without it.
I agree, you've got to have the money. And for me, the money is about the excitement of the jeopardy. So if we can go out and sell the dream and sell that we want to get promoted to Super League, and we, you know, there is an opportunity there to get promoted, and you know, our proposal is two up, two down, and with number one guaranteed promotion. If you've got a decent marketing and commercial department, you can go and get that money, because you deserve it and you're earning it. The trouble with TV money, which is why I call it sort of the lifeline, is it's just a donation and it's going down. And clubs need to go out and say, this is a fantastic product in this town. We've got lots of companies here, and get people to invest in it. And that's what we've done this year. We're not living on Sky money. I mean, you know, it would be a lot easier, but we don't need to, because it's not there for us. But we're investing more because Cowie and his team have gone out and raise the money from corporate partners. It's what my dad did in the 1990s. He was spending 1.2 million on he was spending the equivalent now for the salary cap in 1995, not even in the Super League. He was doing it in what was the second division. And the reason they could do that was because they had built something which was commercial and commercially attractive to sponsors. And they went out and they got that money in. There was no Sky money then. There was no broadcasting money. You got 25 grand if you appeared on BBC in the Challenge Cup. That was it. There was nothing. And they did it because they were selling a good product. And that's what this sport needs to do. It needs to sell a good product. And if it's reliant on getting Sky money, which is declining, and fundamentally, I believe, all sports will end up losing central broadcasting money, because it's becoming so fragmented. You've got Amazon, you've got Apple, you've got Sky, you know, Twitch, you've got it's there's so much supply fundamentally that, you know, they're going to be spending less money on it. And if this sport is wedded to that lifeline, it will fundamentally fail. These clubs have got to be commercial. They've got to offer a good proposal, a good package, and that means entertaining people.
And then when you say clubs cannot survive without the Sky money, if, again, you know, I love when people say about data, and IMG says that word more than I don't know what, you know, just look at the data. Was the sport in a better shape in 95, in 94? Were the crowds 10, 15,000? And has the Sky money that has come into place, you know, since 96, has it helped? Do we have bigger crowds than we had in 95? Or is it declining every single year? The answer is there. You know, having TV money doesn't improve the sport. You know, it's how you spend the money and how you go after money. That's how you improve the sport.
But let's get back to basics. So I don't want to feel that there's a disagreement here on the importance of getting broadcasting revenue. Broadcasting revenue, bring any money coming to the sport is fantastic, right? Absolutely. But I think the proposals now are all about that broadcast revenue. That's what it's solely focused on. That's what IMG are going to get paid for. You know, their 12-year agreement is based upon commission on what they get from broadcasters. What I'm saying about this sport is it needs to build itself up, and then it deserves that broadcast money, and broadcasts will be lining up and saying, we want to invest in you, we want your rights. I mean, at the moment, from what we read, Sky is speaking to the EFL about the soccer rights. They're not talking to anyone else because nobody else is important. They're desperate for EFL because EFL is a great product. If rugby league can make itself a great product without those rights, then people come in and say, we want to invest in you. And then you're building and then you're going for it. And then, you know, you've got a massively successful domestic competition. What IMG are doing, the RFL are doing, they're doing it the other way around. They're going out and basically begging for broadcast revenues, giving it to clubs and saying, you know, here's this money, the top Super League, you can have it, you can spend it how you want. You're going to be protected, to hell with the rest of you. And for me, that is not building a good sustainable sport. And build the sport sustainably from the roots up, make them commercially attractive propositions, and the broadcast will follow. We're doing it the wrong way around.
What do we do with League One? Because this has been a constant question we've asked on this programme before. The Super League sorts itself out. The Championship, as long as there's a path between the two, then that's fine. But what is League One? You have experience of being in League One. What is that competition there for, and how do we build that to be something, or do we just completely scrap it and start all over again?
Well, I think, you know, if you do all this homework, you know, I'm not saying we have all the answers, but surely I think we have more, you know, knowledge than IMG coming with these city rules, giving points for this or, you know, catchment area here. You know, if we just worked on the problems as they currently are, you know, like what we've discussed here at length, you know, even League One would be an amazing tournament to have. We actually said to Simon Johnson, why not have a going up from Conference League? You know, even that in itself, it makes clubs complacent, because you had your West Wales last season. You know, they got one win out of the whole season. But if there is not the jeopardy of you going down, why would anyone invest? And that's what we say, that the having no relegation, it does the opposite effect in a whole league structure. If you know that you're going to be protected, and that's what we are very vocal against, you know, if those that make this category A grading system, the system, you know, and it becomes immune from relegation, why would Leeds feel that, okay, you know, I can spend my salary cap here, 1.2 million, getting amazing players because I want to win, or, you know, I might spend just 200,000, get some players, and I'm going to get all this kind of money, profit that, you know. So there always have to be the jeopardy of you might be going down, because it makes the investment come in. And League One, as it stands, you know, those at the top that come a new season, they want to invest because they want to go to Championship. But it should be also for those at the bottom, you know, as something to teach them. If you're not investing, if you're not having a good squad, if you don't have the minimum standards, you know, you will be dropped down to Conference. And that doesn't exist at the moment. You know, you have your Lock Lanes, you have Cedo. These are community amateur, in a sense, of clubs. They deserve so much more to be in a League One, you know, than I'm sorry, a West Wales, a Cornwall per se, because they came just literally, you know, they are put there in the tournament, and nothing happens if they stay at the bottom.
But it comes back to, for me, to marketing. I feel really, really sorry for clubs in League One, the likes of Rochdale and Hunslet and Doncaster. You know, they're investing in their teams. They're getting, you know, they're getting no central money really, and you know, they're struggling because they're having to go down to Cornwall, having to go down to Midlands and all the rest of it. This is where marketing comes in and where the centre should be supporting these clubs. We went to Hunslet last week for the Challenge Cup. Their team, fabulous, really good. They've got some great players. They've invested well in their team. It, you know, watching the game was great, but there was nothing beyond that. So this is where the RFL, with the Sky money, which I believe shouldn't be given all to Super League, there should be some back for this marketing department, should go to Hunslet and say, right, guys, we understand you're putting all your money into your team and you're doing well on the field, but you're not getting people through your turnstiles because it's not a fun day out. There's nothing beyond the rugby. It's all about you turn up, you pay your money, you sit in the stand, it's freezing cold, you watch the rugby, you go home. I would love to go to Hunslet and you know, there's performers, there's music, it's lively, there's fun going on, there's food stalls, and you know, it's a bit of a party atmosphere. Then you sit down, you watch the rugby, like, wow, they're a really hard team. And they are. I mean, it was a great game of rugby to watch. But these clubs in League One don't have the funding to do that. They don't have the know-how to do that. They don't have the support to do that. This is where the broadcast money, which we talked about earlier, which I think is just getting wasted by giving it to Super League clubs, it should be retained to go and help these clubs in League One to say, let's make your match day experience a great experience. Make it more local, like I was saying, with your Loch Plains and your Siddles and your Thato Heaths. And, you know, there's a bit of local rivalry. Don't put expansion to League One because it's never going to work. It's going to, you know, it's just going to alienate fans even more. I mean, how can a fan from Hunslet go all the way to Cornwall? It's going to cost them a fortune. They're going to take days out of work to do it. It's just not going to work. Create an incubator league in the Southwest with Cornwall playing various teams and all the rest of it, and then maybe two or three might get going and they might come to League One. You've got your rival, then it starts to work. That makes sense. But fundamentally, it's about marketing. League One needs marketing support. It needs basically, I don't know if you watch the on Channel 4, like the Hotel Inspector. You need that the Hotel Inspector to go into these clubs and say, right, guys, you've got a nice building, but we're going to help you make that building to something fabulous, which is going to want to bring people in. And that is the RFL's job. And that's Sky Money job. And it's not being put into the right places. And to have a league of, what, 9 or 10 teams, it's impossible. I mean, how can those clubs really make money to actually pay for a decent team? I don't know how they do it. And I'm so thankful we got out of that league because it was a nightmare.
Last year when we played Cornwall, so we had to do the drive down, right? So you have the bus. We had to book a night in hotel for 30 members of the squad. We spent 5,000 on that trip. So you tell me how other clubs find the money, you know, to go down there. And, you know, even though Cornwall announces amazing crowds, you know, attendances of 1,200, in reality, go there with a camera and count people, there is the 400 that you get. You know, it's one thing for you to announce your crowd and one thing of what the crowd you're getting, you know. So how all these other clubs make that trip down, what for? And one in return, then, and that's something that I put out there. And I said, look, I'm going to make myself a target here, but I just had to address this. And the funny thing is everyone knows, but they just don't talk about it. And when we play Cornwall, in return, you know, like we are very much dependent on gate money. You know, that's what most of the income for a club is. These faraway clubs, they bring nobody. So when you play Lights of Corn or London Scholars or London Broncos and West Wales, you count on zero money added apart from your loyal supports that are there every weekend. You know, so isn't it more interesting to expand where there is rivalry? You know, we should have a club in Harrogate. You know, it's just there around the M62. So that will be the common rivalry, Harrogate against, you know, the next town that is York. Close, you know, York, Blackpool. So these are the fundamentals that we wish IMG had come on board and said, guys, here, this is the problem within the sport. Let's address these things. And then in a couple of years, when then we start having a better product, you know, more crowds. So we raise the standards of 6,000 from championship. Maybe then we are building, you know, you're getting 7,000, 8,000, 10,000. And that's when all TV channels would beg to have you. Then you are holding them hostage because, you know, there will be more than one, two people in the negotiation table. And then you're going to set the price that you want, not the other way around. When there is just a Sky, if there is only Sky, because, you know, every year they have been cutting. You went from 30 million to 24. This is the last deal. This is the last year in the deal. Are they going to reduce even further? Shouldn't we make the game exciting and, you know, have the exposure, and then they would actually be begging to us, not the other way around?
Just going back to Jeopardy for a moment, the two arguably most successful professional leagues are the NFL and the NRL. Neither of those have promotion relegation. Is it essential?
Is that because you're comparing Australia as the main sport of being rugby? That's a comparison that is wrong, really, in the sense of it's, you know, us comparing the products that you have here in England to, you know, NRL. So what they are doing there is going to work here. It's wrong. You can't compare one for the other. You know, here, the main sport of this country is football. If I go to Brazil and then I just, you know, with my wand, you know, with a magical trick, saying, okay, let's create an NRL competition where we're going to have 12 teams and there is no promotion and relegation, because it works in Australia, guys. So it's going to work in Brazil. Everybody will keep watching football, because what is against us here is different than what is against for all the clubs in Australia. So yeah, it does help them there. You know, they have other leagues that there is no going up, going down, but you can they are not like for like. So no, when you are competing with the giants of football in this country, you know, you have to have that jeopardy, because even look at football in this country, you know, they are not protected. So you go up and down, and you know, if you look at we watched it recently, a TV show, Welcome to Wrexham. I don't know if you guys have watched it. Up in Wales, bought by, you know, celebrity Ryan Reynolds. You know, the excitement of a town that now, because they pump the money, you know, that they are winning, and that there is the exciting in going up.
Yeah.
You know, the crowds have gone up. Their sponsorships have gone up. You know, not just because it's a Ryan Reynolds, but because they want to get to the next level, to get to the next level. How many times you see in football competitions, actually, that this tournaments that are aside from their league games, you know, that you have a giant club go to a small town, they lose. The next thing that happens is this town is buzzing. Everybody actually that haven't even followed football, because they have a beat, you know, a Chelsea team. You know, it just drives the force.
But I think also you've got to think of the NRL, for example. Number one, IMG would destroy the NRL because, to say, too many clubs in Sydney. I mean, the NRL is basically Sydney focused. So fundamentally, that kills IMG's argument. The second thing about the NRL is there are 20 million odd people in Australia. You know, it's a small country. So there is less room for that expansion. You look then at the NFL in America, and I've been to an NFL game, I found it absolutely dull as dishwater. No American sport really has left America. And we do business in the United States, and it's a very different place. We all think it's quite similar to us. It's not. Doing business there is very different. The attitude is very different. That's why their sports haven't really expanded beyond their shores. So I'd say the NRL is proof that clubs in a heartland work, because that's what's made that a national sport, with it being Sydney focused, and the American sport model is all about money and it's all about advertising and it's not actually very interesting. And I just don't think that converts into the UK. I think you've got to look at the likes of Burnley, who got promoted to the Premier League in soccer. Under these proposals, they'd be down in League Three, and they were packing Turf Moor out, and that's fabulous. I think that's fabulous. I think it's great for that community, and I think Rugby League has got to fundamentally think in these proposals, is it all about money or is it about the sport and entertaining people and giving people a great day out? And I think from our point of view, and people can disagree, and it might be all about money and all the rest of it, but I personally believe more in people than about money. And I think if we can create a sport that gives people a really good day out in places where there's not much else going on, I think that's something to build on. And I think that then in turn will make this a very successful sport, and then the money will support it, but the money won't dominate it. And I think if you're looking for money to dominate it, the NFL is a perfect example. And I would personally, I would hate for rugby league to become like this country. If it does, that's fine. It's not for me. And, you know, I'll walk away and say good luck, but I wouldn't like that. And I think a lot of sports fans generally wouldn't like that.
Can I just ask a final question? What next? So you met with Simon Johnson. He obviously listened to some of these arguments that you presented to us today. Firstly, how well was that received, or otherwise, do you think that you will be listened to? And in terms of what's next, there's going to be a vote, presumably, at an upcoming board. When is that? And how do you expect that to go?
Simon really came, you know, with an open mind because he wanted to know why we, because he said, you know, you are one of the most progressive clubs, so it's really a shame that you don't see things as we do. And we explained, just as we have explained laid out, you know, our take on the IMG proposals. And he actually took a notepad and he was making notes because the cosmetic, the so simple tasks there that are wrong with the sport, you know, it's not being addressed. So I actually saw him taking notes, you know, and he's like, okay, the London name, you know, as silly as that sounds when you think in a bigger scheme of things, you know, oh, you're talking about rename. Yeah, easy task, Wimbledon. Yeah, but these are not the main objectives there of this proposal. They are literally trying to reshape, redo a whole sport that it should be so good and so big. So he said he will take those concerns, you know, with IMG. We even asked, said, oh, do you have a power there, or have you sold the sports to IMG? Are they in control now, or is the RFL? But they said it's a partnership, you know, so he said that he was putting those points across. There in the meeting, you know, we printed our dossier. I think you guys have had access, you know, that we gave to clubs. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, shouldn't the sport be all in together? Actually, loads of people in the room came to talk to us. He came to shake hands with me and said, very well done. You know, you said things that nobody has had the balls to say. And so you might think that is all in agreement, but no, because people, when fundamentally you go to a tournament and you and Batley asked the question, so hold on, if I win the £1 million game, I will not go up because maybe the loser of the game, or maybe not even the loser, but the third or fourth, they score more points than me. The winner of the £1 million game, is that correct? And the IMG guy said, yes, that's correct. It doesn't mean anything now because it will be considered points. And you tell me that will not destroy the sport. You know, tell that to your fans. Imagine you win that game, but the fifth guy on the table, it's actually going to...
I mean, that was basically our fundamental conversation with Simon, which was, we agree with minimum standards. We tentatively agree with grade A. I get that. You know, you've got your Warringtons, so you've got 10,000 people the other day, which is fantastic. You've got your grade Bs, which aren't quite there, but, you know, should have a chance. That's where we disagree in terms of then subgrading. So, like Carrie said, you can have someone wins £1 million game as a B4 and the loser is a B3. The B3 is going to go up. They've lost a game. They're only 1 point off on the grading, but they're going to go up. That, for me, is not fair. And that was a fundamental point we made to Simon. And to his credit and to the RFL's credit, this is a very different RFL to what was there in 1995 when my dad was there. Back then, it was very much closed doors. We don't want to talk to you. You're irrelevant. Go away. The RFL now are, we think this is a good proposal. We want to talk to you. We want to understand why you don't like it. We want to try and convince you, but we, you know, let's all work together. And I fully respect Simon and the RFL for that. I worry about IMG. They're a big organization. I've actually worked with IMG, funnily enough, in our business. We once got a license off them from Wimbledon for some products we made. So I know, I've seen the internals of IMG. When they make their mind up, it's made up. And like, it's their way or the highway. That concerns me. I'm hopeful that the partnership they have with the RFL and the RFL being reasonable people, and the way Simon came and spent 4 hours with us here showed he was very reasonable, means these plans can be watered down and we can actually all come together. And I think that was one of the points you made at the beginning, which is, you know, it's sad that, you know, you're dissenting on this and, you know, it's not going to help the sport. I want us all to come together. I want us all to say, actually, this is a really, really good idea. And a lot of it we agree with. But if we can just all put our brain power into this pot, and we all say, right, let's mix it up and see what's going to happen. And then we all come out and say, this is a solution. Let's go together. That will be fantastic for this sport. We'll build it from the ground up. We'll get the broadcast will come in, the money will come in, the fans will come in, and we can sit here in 5-10 years time and say, finally, finally, this sport has made the right decisions. And that's all we're trying to do, really, fundamentally.
Yeah. And just back to James, you know, that there is a vote in April. and that would then be the definite, you know, if they have more than 50% voting for these measures to take place, then they win the contract. But if not, then there will be a rethink of the whole thing. And, you know, I don't necessarily think we need a giant marketing company to come and tell us what is obvious. You know, we have done that for free. You know, if you talk to anyone, the problems there are so easily fixed, you know, just...
No, but in some ways, I agree with Kerry there, but I also disagree in some ways, which is it's all about marketing. And if IMG are that marketing partner, fabulous. But don't let IMG be that partner that takes over this sport and implements everything from the top down. If they're going to come in and help us market it, fantastic. If they're going to come in and say, we are now the supreme leads and you're going to do this, that, and the other, and we're based in, I don't know, New York or California, and we've got a subdivision in London, and we've decided this is how this sport's going to work. I don't agree with that. But I think they can bring value. But I think if we literally just give all control to them, I think that's the wrong way to go. And I'm worried that's where we are.
We've taken a quarter of the time Simon Johnson had today, so I feel very... very honoured that you've taken the time to speak to us. Good luck with the future. I don't know what to say because I don't know what's going to happen next. And it's
who knows? None of us do.
but you're exactly right. Marketing is everything and we don't do it properly. So on that point, we can agree and we'll see what happens next. And I'd say best of luck for the rest of the season. But obviously... Well, results may not matter in the future, I don't know what to
do. We never want to lose. We're losing too much at the moment. We need to turn that ship around. So we'll see what happens. But thanks, guys, for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for the invite.